Will you join me in prayer? Oh God, we thank you for your word. We thank you for your spirit that is present here and moving in our midst. We open ourselves up to your word and to your spirit. In Jesus' name, amen. Can you all hear me okay? Is the volume all right? Okay. I don't feel loud enough. So last Sunday, for those of you who were here, we explored the question that Jesus asked his disciples just a chapter earlier in Mark's gospel. Who do you say that I am? Who do you say that I am? And we took some time to think about our responses to that question. We talked about how that question was asked by Jesus not just so that we could think about his life and his identity, but that question was asked so that we could think about our lives and our identity. Who do you say that I am is simultaneously, who will you say that you are? Who do you say that you are? And some of us answer, Jesus is the way. Jesus is the Prince of Peace, the radical teacher, the freedom fighter, my friend. So then who are we? And we thought about that question, who are we and who will we follow in this way? This week, the gospel lesson again is about discipleship, which just means following Jesus. What does it mean to follow Jesus? And again, Jesus asks a question to allow us to think about what it means for us to follow. Some may say that Jesus answers a lot of questions, but in actuality, Jesus asks a lot more questions than he answers. I have heard that Jesus only directly answers 3 of the 183 questions that are asked of him in all of the 4 Gospels. Isn't that interesting? And Jesus himself asks 307 questions throughout all of the Gospels. That's a lot of questions that he asks. A theologian and peace activist, John Deere, wrote a book about all of the questions that Jesus asks. And he likens Jesus to a kind of Zen master whose questions point to the truth of reality. Or he's like a Socratic teacher. Jesus asks questions as a teaching method, as a way of teaching. And like the prophets before him, Jesus rails against the ruling authorities with questions that beg for justice and conversion. 2,000 years later, these questions still hang in the air for us, for those of us who want to be followers of Jesus, for those of us who are willing to take to heart these questions. Because Jesus' aim is to get at the truth about our lives. Answering Jesus' questions are actually not about answering them, at least not in the way that we think about answering a question as like an intellectual exercise or having to get a right answer as if it's a test. Answering Jesus' questions are not like that. It's more about carrying the questions around in our pockets, carrying them in our hearts, and allowing the questions to permeate our lives. It's really about paying attention to how we're living. That's the function of his questions. And if we're willing to sit with his questions, more than likely, we will find that his questions tend to reposition us. We may notice that some of our unconscious biases are brought to light. We may be moved to break out of our dualistic binary mindset or challenged to reimagine God and the world by sitting with Jesus' questions. Last Sunday, the question was, who do you say that I am? The question today is, what were you arguing about while you were on the way? What were you arguing about while you were on the way? We are reminded that the disciples are on the way. They're on the way. The earliest followers of Jesus talked about themselves as being people of the way. It reminds us that Christianity is not about a set of principles or religious beliefs. Christianity is about a way of life. And so the disciples were on this way and they found themselves arguing. And Jesus asked them, "What were you arguing about on the way?" And their response to that question is silence. Silence. I think they were silent because they were being called out. You know that feeling of being called out, especially by someone who loves you and cares about you? I think many of us share values that I would say I have, values of compassion, peacemaking, nonviolence, anti-racism, fighting homophobia and transphobia. And have you ever been called out for the ways in which you are not living into those values? I have. Silence is usually my first response. Whew! Yeah, to hear that truth, just something that maybe was unconscious being brought to light. When I say that I want to be a person like Jesus who doesn't seek status or privilege or wealth or power over others, and then often when noticing it, I'm perhaps unconsciously seeking those very things with my actions or my preoccupations, and someone calls me out to the truth about my preoccupations. What are you arguing about, Katie, while you're on the way? What are you preoccupied with? What are you really striving for? Jesus is in the habit of calling people out not to be on some self-righteous kick or prove that he's better than us, but it's out of love for us. He wants us to live lives of integrity. He wants us where we say we believe and want, what we say we believe and want, he wants us to reflect those things in our aspirations and in our actions. These two things, what we say we want to believe or what we say we believe and what we're actually doing, they don't always go together. And sometimes we need those things to come to light for someone to point that out. So that question from Jesus already begins to unmask the true aspirations of the disciples. And I'm sure it was painful for them to see. They fell immediately silent. They knew enough about Jesus' way to know that they were off in their aspirations. They were really off. They were seeking power, wealth, and prestige, something people in the ancient world were captivated by, as are we today. And the fact that these are male disciples, the calling out is even more biting. They were striving for what most men would be encouraged to strive for in their culture. They had a certain amount of privilege in their culture, a privilege that they were being asked to attend to look at. What are you arguing about while you're on the way? The question Jesus asked the disciples in love calls them out and calls them into the truth of what's going on for them. I think it's important to notice a very small detail in this story, and it has to do with the pointing out that they stopped in a home to have this conversation. Home. They stopped. They were on the way. They stopped. They had to stop to have this conversation. Home is where we deal with internal matters. Housekeeping. House matters. Home is where we begin with ourselves and with the people we trust, with a community of trust, of love, and courage. It is in these spaces where Jesus invites us to attend to the violence and greed, materialism, racism, idolatry that is in our own hearts, not to shame us, but to restore us, to lead us into truth so that we can become the people of compassion that we want to be. And we have to start at home, close to home. The detail about being at home, this physical detail in the story, makes me think that there were probably children around in the house where they were. I'd like to imagine as they are trying to have this deep conversation that there are loud and distracting children running around in the house. And maybe the disciples are annoyed, as they often seem to be when there's children around. So Jesus has asked them this question, to which their response is silence. The disciples are beginning to look at their own unconscious biases and preoccupation with domination and privilege. And as these preoccupations are coming to light for them, Jesus shows them how everything needs to be reimagined. And so he brings a child into their midst, right in the center. Now, children, this is different for us today, but children in the ancient world were the embodiment of the least of these. I mean, not only were they little, but they were considered little in terms of importance. Children in the ancient world were essentially non-entities. They were without honor, without social standing. A child couldn't contribute much, if anything, to the economic value of a household. A child could not do anything to enhance their position or their prestige or their influence. They basically had to wait until they got older to be counted, to be considered significant. So Jesus puts the child right in the center. And what happens, and notice that the disciples are then physically asked to be on the margins. The child becomes the center, and now their bodies, they can begin to feel and experience this new reality, because it's not a head thing, it's about your body and your location. The privilege, their privilege, they need to step back and move to the margins. The child is now in the center. And Jesus, as if showing them, kind of choreographing this whole movement, is showing them how God's will and God's way is very different. It's very different from what you learn in your culture and your society. Not only is the least of these in the center is where God is. The least of these is God. This really is a shocking story. We often tend to think about Jesus and children in a sort of cuddly, kind fashion, which I think hopefully he did cuddle the children and he was fun and laughed and played with them. I'd like to imagine that. But we forget that there is a very big disruption happening in terms of how he is throwing on its head the way that we understand reality. And that in God's reign and God's will, it totally confronts the dominant values of our culture. That's what's happening in this story. And I think the fact that they are at home, and they are at home, also asked to be at home with themselves, hearing Jesus' question directed to them as disciples, and feeling physically in their bodies what it means to step out of the center. I think that question then needs to be directed again to us, because we are also his disciples. What are you arguing about while you're on the way? What are your preoccupations? What are you striving for? Where do you find a trusting and loving community to call out those things in you that are often going unnoticed? Can we make time to sit with the questions that Jesus asks us? So I'm going to ask us to take some time now, just as we did last week. And before we sing our sermon response, I'd like us to just take a few moments in silence to be at home with ourselves and in the presence of Jesus. Notice what comes up for you when you hear that question. What are you arguing about while you're on the way? And remember that Jesus did not come to kill or destroy you. He came that you and I might have life and have it abundantly. The important thing to remember is that when Jesus asks us questions, he asks in the context of loving us and wanting us to be whole, integrated people people whose way of life reflects our values and what we're striving for, because we long to see the change in the world out there. But it takes a lot of work, a lot of surrendering, a lot of listening to allow change in our own hearts and lives. So let us reflect. What are you arguing about while you're on the way?